Sometimes I stand in my backyard with a baseball and a bat. I serve up a pitch and I swing real hard. I give that ball a whack. Ooh, I love baseball. And I like to pretend that my yard is a stadium. My fans, they stand on the porch and scream when I wave to them. Ooh, I love baseball. Ooh, I love baseball. Sometimes I hit a ground ball. Sometimes I hit a pop fly. Sometimes I miss when I swing, but that's all right.
Welcome to Library on the Go. We bring stories and adventures to you. I'm Ms. Laura.
And I'm Ms. Barbara.
Of the Cortez Public Library. And Ms. Barbara has two thrilling stories for you today.
Well, I hope they're thrilling. The first one is going to be about a ball player who lived over 100 years ago. And his name was Joseph Jefferson Jackson, and maybe you, some of your parents anyway, know him as Shoeless Joe Jackson. He was born in 1888 in South Carolina, and he came from a very poor family. And since he was the oldest of six boys and two girls, he went to work when he was 6 years old. This was before we had child labor laws. And because of that, he never learned how to read and write. He started playing baseball when he was 13, and he started out as a pitcher, but he threw so hard he broke a catcher's arm, so he moved to the outfield. He got his nickname because he bought himself a pair of new spikes, and they caused blisters on his feet so bad that he could hardly walk. He wanted to sit out that game, but the team didn't have enough players, so he took his shoes off, and he played in his stocking feet, and that's where he got the nickname Shoeless Joe. Baseball players are kind of superstitious, and Joe believed that there were only so many hits in his bat. So when he got into a slump, he would change his bats. He started out making $75 a month playing in the minor leagues. 1911 was the first full season in the majors, and he hit 408. That's a record that still stands for rookies. Nobody has come close to that. In 1915, he was traded to the Chicago White Sox, and 3 years later, they went to the World Series. They went back again in 1919, and Joe got caught up in what was referred to as the Black Sox scandal. And the reason it was called the Black Sox, the Chicago team was the White Sox, but Charles Comiskey, who owned the White Sox, was too cheap to launder their uniforms, so they labeled themselves the Black Sox. Allegedly, he was offered $20,000 to throw the World Series game. Now, there's not much evidence that says he actually partook of this because he hit 375, he had 12 hits in 8 games, and he didn't make a single error. He played an extremely good series. But the law people in Chicago brought charges against these 8 players. And supposedly they had signed confessions. But these confessions disappeared somehow. And that doesn't surprise me in Chicago, the way things were then. But they disappeared and the whole group was acquitted. But the new commissioner of baseball, who was Kennesaw Landis, banned all 8 of the players for life. Now, Joe, as I said, didn't seem to take part in this. And I've heard the story, and I don't know whether this is true or not, but since Joe couldn't read or write, somebody brought him something to sign. And I don't know what they told him it was, but he signed it. That was all he knew how to do, was write his name. And so they had supposedly a signed confession from him, too, even though I don't think he intended to sign a confession. His overall lifetime batting average was 356, which is an amazing number. There's only two ball players, Ty Cobb and Roger Hornsby, who had a higher lifetime average. And a lot of people thought Joe Jackson was the best baseball player ever. So we're going to read Shoeless Joe and Black Betsy by Phil Bildner, illustrated by C.F. Payne, published by Simon & Schuster Books for Young Readers. Shoeless Joe Jackson once played an entire baseball game in his stocking feet. That's why they called him Shoeless Joe. Some say he was the greatest baseball player ever. Even the mighty Babe Ruth copied his swing. But what most people don't know is just how Shoeless Joe became such a great hitter. They say before Shoeless Joe was to start playing in the minors, he fell into a terrible hitting slump, the worst slump of his life. No matter what he tried, Shoeless Joe simply could not hit a baseball. He changed the way he stood at home plate. It didn't work. He switched from batting lefty to batting righty. Didn't work. He even tried wearing glasses. Still didn't work. Shoeless Joe grew more and more concerned. How could he possibly play baseball if he could no longer hit? Then Shoeless Joe had an idea. He went to see his friend Old Charlie Ferguson. Old Charlie was the finest batsmith in all of South Carolina, in all of the South for that matter. If it had to do with a baseball bat, Charlie was your man. "Charlie," Shoeless Joe said, "I have an awful problem. I can't hit a baseball anymore, and I'm supposed to start playing in the minors. I need your help." Old Charlie raised his bushy right eyebrow. "Well, what do you want me to do about it, Shoeless Joe? I reckon I haven't played baseball in 40 years. "I need you to make me a bat," Shoeless Joe replied. "But not just any bat. I need you to make me the greatest baseball bat there ever was. If you do, I just know I will break out of this awful slump." Old Charlie looked at him. "You're an odd character, Shoeless Joe, but I reckon there ain't no job Old Charlie can't handle. You come back in a few days and I'll have what you need." A few days later, Shoeless Joe returned to Old Charlie's workshop, and Old Charlie handed Shoeless Joe the most beautiful baseball bat he had ever seen. "That's the bat," Shoeless Joe exclaimed. "She'll definitely be able to hit a baseball. I think I'm going to call her Betsy, after Betsy Ross. Pitchers are going to honor and respect this bat the way they respect the flag Betsy Ross created." So off Shoeless Joe went, but he still couldn't break out of his slump. A few days later, he was back at Old Charlie's workshop with Betsy in hand. "Charlie, I'm still in this slump. What kind of wood is Betsy?" Shoeless Joe asked. "Oak, oak," Charlie replied. "Strongest wood there is." Shoeless Joe wagged his finger. "I need you to make Betsy out of hickory." Old Charlie raised his bushy right eyebrow. "Hickory?" Shoeless Joe smiled and nodded. "My last name's Jackson, just like the 7th President of the United States, Andrew Jackson, and they called him Old Hickory. Any Jackson who swings a baseball bat must use one that's made of hickory, and Betsy needs to be made of hickory from the north side of a hickory tree. That's the strongest." Old Charlie looked at Joe and said, "You're an odd character, Shoeless Joe, but I reckon there ain't no job that Old Charlie can't handle. You came back in a few days, and I'll have what you need." A few days later, Shoeless Joe returned to Old Charlie's workshop, and Old Charlie handed Shoeless Joe the most beautiful baseball bat he had ever seen. "That's the bat," Shoeless Joe exclaimed. "She'll definitely be able to hit a baseball." So off Shoeless Joe went, but he still couldn't break out of his slump. A few days later, he was back at Old Charlie's workshop with Betsy in hand. "Charlie, I'm still in this slump. Pitchers aren't even afraid of her. Why?" "Well, I reckon I don't recall much about pitchers," Old Charlie replied. "I only know bats." Shoeless Joe wagged his finger. "I need for you to make Betsy mean and big and tough." Old Charlie raised his bushy eyebrows. "Mean and big and tough?" Shoeless Joe smiled and nodded. I need pitchers to be frightened of Betsy. I want them quaking in their spikes. Rub her down with tobacco juice. Make her dark and scary looking. And make her big, real big. Betsy must weigh 48 ounces, 1 ounce for each state in America. Once again, old Charlie looked at Joe and said, "You are an odd character, Shoeless Joe, but I reckon there ain't no job that old Charlie can't handle. You come back in a few days and I'll have what you need. But I'm telling you, Joe, sure as the sky is blue and the grass is green, I reckon there ain't much else I can do." The day before he was to start playing in the minors, Shoeless Joe returned to old Charlie's workshop, and the moment Shoeless Joe stepped through the door, old Charlie raised his bushy right eyebrow and spoke these words, "You're an odd character, Shoeless Joe. I reckon I've told you that each time you come to see me. My job is done. The rest is up to you." Then old Charlie gave Shoeless Joe the biggest and most beautiful black baseball bat he had ever seen. "That's the bat," Shoeless Joe exclaimed. "That's Black Betsy." So off Shoeless Joe went to the minor leagues. Playing in Greenville, South Carolina, that first year in the minors, he had a great year. Swinging Black Betsy, Shoeless Joe had 120 hits in only 87 games. And at the end of the season, Shoeless Joe got called up to play for the Philadelphia in the major leagues. But things didn't go well for Shoeless Joe. He could only manage 3 hits in the majors, so they sent him back down to the minors. Shoeless Joe was dejected, so he and Black Betsy went back to see old Charlie. "Charlie, I don't know what to do." Shoeless Joe hung his head low. "Black Betsy and I hit 346 over in Greenville, but when we got called up to the majors, we couldn't hit a lick." Old Charlie took one look at Black Betsy and raised his bushy right eyebrow. "Shoeless Joe, you're a mighty fine baseball player, and I reckon you've got yourself the finest baseball bat in all the land. But sure as the sky is blue and the grass is green, I reckon you don't know a thing about taking care of Black Betsy. Don't you know Black Betsy needs warmth and love? She needs to sleep in your bed each and every night." "Thank you, Charlie," Shoeless Joe said. "I'll do that." So every single night, Black Betsy slept right beside Shoeless Joe. Playing in Savannah that second year in the minors, he had an even greater season. Swinging Black Betsy, Shoeless Joe had 161 hits in only 118 games. At the end of the season, Shoeless Joe got called up to play for Philadelphia again in the big leagues. But things didn't go well for Shoeless Joe. Once again, he could manage only 3 hits in the big leagues, so they sent him back down to the minors. Shoeless Joe was even more dejected, so he and Black Betsy went back to see old Charlie. "Charlie, I don't know what to do," Shoeless Joe hung his head low. "Black Betsy and I hit 358 down in Savannah, but when we got called up to the big leagues, we couldn't hit a lick. I even did what you told me to do." Old Charlie took one look at Black Betsy and raised his bushy right eyebrow. "Shoeless Joe, you're a mighty fine baseball player, and I reckon you've got yourself the finest baseball bat in all the land. But sure as the sky is blue and the grass is green, I reckon you still don't know a thing about taking care of Black Betsy. Don't you know Black Betsy needs more than just a warm bed? She needs a sweet oil massage every single night. I reckon she takes an awful bruising from all them baseballs." "Thank you, Charlie," Shoeless Joe said. "I'll do that." And every single night, Shoeless Joe massaged Black Betsy with sweet oil. And every single night, Black Betsy slept right beside Shoeless Joe. And playing in New Orleans that third season in the minors, he had an even greater season. Swinging Black Betsy, Shoeless Joe had 165 hits in only 136 games. At the end of the season, Shoeless Joe got called up to play for Cleveland in the major leagues again. But before going to Cleveland, Shoeless Joe and Black Betsy went to see old Charlie. "Old Charlie, Black Betsy and I hit 354 down in New Orleans, and we've been called back up to the big leagues. I've been treating Betsy real good, but I'm worried things won't work out again. Old Charlie took one look at Black Betsy and raised his bushy right eyebrow. Shoeless Joe, you're a mighty fine baseball player, and I reckon you got yourself the finest baseball bat in all the land. I can see you're learning how to take care of Black Betsy. Old Charlie ran his fingertips over Black Betsy's wood. When you get up north to Cleveland, you make sure you wrap her in cotton cloth every night. The South is the land of cotton, Shoeless Joe, and a good Southerner must always be true to his roots. Cotton will make Black Betsy feel right at home in Cleveland. Thank you, Charlie, Shoeless Joe said. I'll do that. Shoeless Joe followed all of Old Charlie's instructions, and everything went perfectly. Swinging Black Betsy, Shoeless Joe had 29 hits in only 20 games. At the end of the season, Cleveland asked Shoeless Joe to come back to the major leagues again the next year. Shoeless Joe took Black Betsy down south with him for the winter because, as he used to say, bats don't like to freeze no more than me. And he took care of Black Betsy like no other bat had ever been cared for in the history of baseball. He slept beside her every single night. He sweet oil massaged her every single night. And he wrapped her in cotton cloth every single night. In the springtime, Shoeless Joe went to play baseball in Cleveland. In his first game, using Black Betsy, Shoeless Joe hit his longest home run ever. He had a great season. Swinging Black Betsy, Shoeless Joe had 233 hits in only 147 games. They batted .408, and to this day, no rookie has ever had a finer year than Shoeless Joe. And, of course, Black Betsy. The end.
That's a great book, and it's too bad that it has a tragic ending with the scandal.
Well, it does, but, you know, as I said, I really don't think he was aware that he was getting wrapped up in that scandal. His statistics from playing in that World Series were phenomenal. You don't throw a game by playing as well as he did. Now, for those of you that like the story, you want to learn more about Shoeless Joe Jackson, come into the library. We'll help you find out some more.
Well, and the way that I think about that is somebody broke up a really good team. So you kind of wonder about the motive.
The baseball was a lot different back then than it is now. And some of it was better, some of it not so good. The idea, though, that a man who cannot read or write could write out a confession and sign it just doesn't seem plausible. And as I said, his record in that World Series sure didn't show that he
was trying to throw the game. You're joining Library on the Go. We're on KSJD, Dryland Community Radio, 90.5 and 91.5 FM. And the song at the beginning is I Love Baseball by Jim Cosgrove. And here's Ms. Barbara's final story for today.
For today. We hope it's not the final one. This is called The Day the Crayons Quit. And the day they quit, they all wrote letters. And that's what these are, is letters to the little boy who owned the crayons. And this is called The Day the Crayons Quit by Drew Daywalt. Pictures by Oliver Jeffries. Published by Philomel Books. One day in class, Duncan went to take out his crayons and found a stack of letters with his name on them. Hey, Duncan, it's me, Red Crayon. We need to talk. You make me work harder than any of your other crayons. All year long, I wear myself out coloring fire engines, apples, strawberries, and everything else that's red. I even work on holidays. I have to color all the Santas at Christmas and all the hearts on Valentine's Day. I need a rest. Your overworked friend, Red Crayon. Dear Duncan, all right, listen. I love that I'm your favorite crayon for grapes and dragons and wizard's hats, but it makes me crazy that so much of my gorgeous color goes outside the lines. If you don't start coloring inside the lines soon, I'm going to completely lose it. your very neat friend, Purple Crayon. Dear Duncan, I'm tired of being called light brown or dark tan because I am neither. I am beige, and I am proud. I'm also tired of being second place to Mr. Brown Crayon. It's not fair that Brown gets all the bears and ponies and puppies, while the only things I get are turkey dinners, if I'm lucky, and wheat. And let's be honest, when was the last time you saw a kid excited about coloring wheat? Your beige friend, Beige Crayon. Duncan, Gray Crayon here. You're killing me. I know you love elephants, and I know that elephants are gray, but that's a lot of space to color in all by myself. And don't even get me started on your rhinos, hippos, and humpback whales. You know how tired I am after handling one of those things? Such big animals. Baby penguins are gray, you know, and so are very tiny rocks, pebbles. How about one of those once in a while to give me a break? Your very tired friend, Gray Crayon. Dear Duncan, you color with me, but why? Most of the time, I'm the same color as the page you are using me on, white. If I didn't have a black outline, you wouldn't even know I was there. I'm not even in the rainbow. I'm only used to color snow or to fill in empty space between other things. And it leaves me feeling, well, empty. We need to talk. Your empty friend, White Crayon. Hi, Duncan. I hate being used to draw the outline of things, things that are colored in by other colors, all of which think they're brighter than me. It's not fair when you use me to draw a nice beach ball and then fill in the colors of the ball with all the other crayons. How about a black beach ball sometime? Is that too much to ask? Your friend, Black Crayon. Dear Duncan, as Green Crayon, I am writing for two reasons. One is to say that I like my workloads of crocodiles, trees, dinosaurs, and frogs. I have no problems and wish to congratulate you on a very successful coloring things green career so far. The second reason I write is for my friends, Yellow Crayon and Orange Crayon, who are no longer speaking to each other. Both crayons feel they should be the color of the sun. Please settle this soon because they're driving the rest of us crazy. Your happy friend, Green Crayon. Dear Duncan, Yellow Crayon here. I need you to tell Orange Crayon that I am the color of the sun. I would tell him, but we are no longer speaking. And I can prove I'm the color of the sun, too. Last Tuesday, you used me to color in the sun on your Happy Farm coloring book. In case you've forgotten, it's on page 7. You can't miss me. I'm shining down brilliantly on a field of yellow corn. Your pal and the true color of the sun, Yellow Crayon. Dear Duncan, I see Yellow Crayon already talked to you, the big whiner. Anyway, could you please tell Mr. Tattletale that he is not the color of the sun? I would, but we're no longer speaking. We both know I am clearly the color of the sun because on Thursday you used me to color the sun on both the Monkey Island and the Meet the Zookeeper pages in your book, Day at the Zoo. Orange, you glad I'm here? Ha, your pal, and the real color of the sun, Orange Crayon. Dear Duncan, it has been great being your favorite color this past year, and the year before that. I have really enjoyed all those oceans, lakes, rivers, raindrops, rain clouds, and clear skies. But the bad news is that I am so short and stubby, I can't even see over the railing in the crayon box anymore. I need a break, your very stubby friend, Blue Crayon. Duncan, okay, listen here, kid. You have not used me once in the past year. It's because you think I'm a girl's color, isn't it? Speaking of which, please tell your little sister I said thanks. Thank you for using me to color in her Little Princess coloring book. I think she did a fabulous job of staying inside the lines. Now, back to us. Could you please use me sometime to color the occasional pink dinosaur or monster or cowboy? Goodness knows they could use a splash of color. Your unused friend, Pink Crayon. Hey, Duncan, it's me, Peach Crayon. Why did you peel off my paper wrapping? Now I'm naked and too embarrassed to leave the crayon box. I don't even have any underwear. How would you like to go to school naked? I need some clothes. Help! Your naked friend, Peach Crayon. Well, poor Duncan just wanted to color, and of course he wanted his crayons to be happy, and that gave him an idea. When Duncan showed his teacher his new picture, she gave him an A for coloring and an A+ for creativity. The end. And the picture shows some really unique things like an orange whale, a pink airplane, a purple dinosaur, a black rainbow, a red horse, a purple frog, a pink dinosaur. He was creative.
Yes, and he was very judicious with giving everybody a chance.
Yes, I think that's a good idea. You know, we don't always give everybody as many chances as they should have, maybe.
Mm-hmm. And they were very concerned about coloring inside the lines. And I always say, if you want to, color outside the lines as a figure of speech. Thank you for joining us today on KSJD, Dryland Community Radio. We're 90.5 and 91.5 FM. We have story times every Thursday at the Cortez Library at 10:30 in the morning. And we are in full swing with our summer reading program. Please come and pick up a reading log. And on June 11th, we will start with our family entertainment series. I will have more for you on that next week. We do have our show here on KSJD every Sunday at 3:30. Please share that with your friends. Miss Barbara and I have been having a lot of fun doing this, and we would love to have some feedback so we know that we're doing what we intend to do, which is to promote early literacy. And I don't know if Miss Barbara has anything to say or add to this.
It's just that summer's here. You need to come into the library. Yeah, it's fun to play outside, but don't forget the books, too.
Yes. Yeah, don't lose your reading skills over the summer. And believe me, it happens. Okay, here's Jim Cosgrove again with I Love Baseball.
Sometimes I stand in my backyard with a baseball and a bat. I serve up a pitch and I swing real hard. I give that ball a whack. Ooh, I love baseball. And I like to pretend.
Thank you for joining us.